Hi, I'm Liz Landford, arts correspondent for ArtSound FM, and I have the great pleasure of being joined in the studio by Karen Vickery. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Karen is a passionate supporter of the arts. Amongst her many achievements, she is one of the directors of ACT Hub in Canberra, has directed many theatre productions, and has performed in numerous theatre, film, TV and radio productions, including in Gillian Armstrong's film Oscar and Lucinda. Karen won the Helen Songus Award for Excellence in Acting at the Canberra Critics Awards. This was for Karen's acting in As You Like It, Urinetown, and Three Tall Women. Karen also had multiple nominations for and has won 2 Canberra Area Theatre Awards. Karen is a NIDA graduate and lectured at NIDA for about 14 years, including holding the position as Head of Performance Practices during part of her time there. Karen was also Director of Learning and Visitor Experience at Canberra's National Portrait Gallery for some time.
Such an extraordinary bio, Karen. We're very lucky to have you.
I've been very lucky to do all those things. My career has been entirely composed of things I love.
So wonderful. I suppose just to start off, it would be great to explore your theatre and film experience.
Yeah, sure.
What is ACT Hub and what most excites you about your current and future projects in that space?
ACT Hub is my great love at the moment and will continue to be into the foreseeable future. ACT Hub is Canberra's first established independent theatre cooperative. I have to sort of think through those words and say them slowly because it's a complex idea. It's the coming together of 3 independent theatre companies together within their own home, which is the old Causeway Hall, which is famous to many as a wonderful community space, which was the first hall established and built in Canberra, in fact, built by those very men and women that built Canberra itself. So it's pretty fabulous. And it was there for boxing and for pantomime and for musical evenings and soirees and dances. And there are many Canberrans who have memories of events, dances, where they met their husband at Causeway Hall, etc. And that's the home now of ACT Hub. And we do a season. It's a cooperative of 3 independent companies, as I said. So Free Rein Theatre Company, Everyman Theatre, and Chaika Theatre Company, which is mine. And between the 3 of us, we have 3 directors of ACT Hub, and we have a large cooperative of people who work to keep everything humming at ACT Hub, about 30 all in all. So it's a big and wonderful and diverse group of artists, theatre artists from Canberra, and we do a season of 8 plays. And we also run a learning program, and we're also available for hire for other theatre events or different kinds of events that might suit in a theatre space. So, yeah, that's what ACT Hub is, in short.
Amazing.
It's a theatre, a living, working theatre.
With so much history.
With so much history, yeah, which I just love.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about your upcoming performance with your adult children? Who are also actors.
Yeah. Well, I have worked with one of my children, my daughter, who trained at Whopper. So she's a very serious young actor and a very fine one, I have to say. And we've done a number of shows together over the years, actually. And I think we both approached it initially with some trepidation. You know, you think, oh, how's this going to work? But actually, I can only speak from my perspective, but it's just wonderful to work with such a fine young actor. And that's what she becomes. There are moments when the daughter breaks through and is rude to me. Like, oh, mother, you know, or whatever. But for the most part, it's just 2 artists working together who actually, we have a shorthand, I guess. It's automatic and the energy between us is terrific. So it's totally pleasurable for me, and I'm incredibly proud of her. She's just really good. She makes me better. And my son also is an actor, but he is very choosy, and he does only one or two things a year, if we're lucky. He's disgraceful. I haven't worked with him actor to actor, but I have directed him. And in his first show in Canberra, I directed him. And it was really a pleasure to work with him. But I have watched him doing other roles for other companies. He was in 12 Angry Men for Every Man. And most recently, he was extraordinarily frightening in The Boys, which was directed by Amy Kovalchuk and her company at The Hub. And he was playing the violent and terrifying Brett Sprague in that play. And my daughter and I sat there holding hands and just going, this is really difficult. That's our boy. But he was really scary. Mm. So, yeah, he's quite wonderful too. So the prospect of having three of us together in one production is very exciting. And he has expressed a desire to, I want to work with you as an actor. I went, okay, let's see what happens. So we have got something we hope, fingers crossed, will come up early next year.
Look, so looking forward to
that. I know. It's like a weird sort of dynasty. But that sounds way too pompous.
No, it sounds wonderful. And, yeah, looking forward to watching it.
Yeah.
That will be great.
Yep, early next year at The Hub.
Excellent. What has been your experience of some of the key challenges and opportunities that directors and creators of theatre companies face?
Goodness. Well, you know, money is the biggest challenge. One's own personal savings go down because it's you're the producer, you're the director, you're the lead actor, whatever it is that you're doing on that particular show, and sometimes you can be doing more than one of those things at the same time, you have to self-fund. And although there are sources of funding available, they're competed for. The same old people can't keep getting, from the public purse, and that's totally understandable. It's also incredibly time-consuming and difficult doing those applications. So you have to weigh up the value, relative value of your time in actually making an application with all that entails, which is days and days and days of work, and whether that time might not be better spent. You've got to work it out. And so that is always the issue for all of us in the arts. The amount of self-funding is extraordinary, and artists themselves are amongst the lowest paid people in the community. And I know that ACT government is working really hard to shift that mindset, which is very much appreciated, but it's a long project. It's not going to happen overnight, and it can't. So that, I know it's a dreadful thing to say, but that is actually the biggest challenge that any independent performance maker faces: funding.
Yeah.
Yep. We're not short of ideas.
Yes.
We're not short of passion. And that's why we often drive through the issue of funding, often to our own detriment.
What is it about the arts, and particularly theatre, that has seen you invest so much of your life in it, in every way?
Oh, look, for me, it's the most complete art form because it embraces the visual arts, it embraces music, it embraces literature, and it's embodied. And I think that's compelling and fascinating. And as an artist, as an actor or a director, you never get it right. It's a never-ending journey, and that's compelling as well. And I also think that as someone who's impatient and curious and avaricious for life, the pursuit of theatre is just the most wonderful pursuit, because you work with different people, you work on completely different projects and you become immersed, but it's for a finite time. And then you move on to the next thing. And it gives you such rewards. It rewards curiosity. It rewards tenacity. With any luck, you get better at what you're doing. Yeah. And that's always something that you're striving for. But as I said, you never complete that. You never complete that. So there is always something to learn. And I love that. That's what I love about it.
What have been some of your most memorable moments in theatre? I'm sure there are many.
Oh, my goodness, there are. There are a lot. Well.
And in film, actually. And in film.
Well, I have to say, in film, Oscar and Lucinda, that was very exciting because that is the largest, most, I guess, Hollywood-esque production that I've been involved in. I had a cameo role in that. I was very excited to get that. And I guess the screen time is probably about 3-4 minutes tops, but it took 3 days to do the scene and everything that is concerned around it. And that's a very fascinating thing, I think, for people who aren't involved to imagine. There are so many people involved in the making of a film. It's very, and when it's a film on that scale, it's very regimented. It's quite military. And so you have to be in a certain spot at a certain time, and then you will be in the caravan and you'll have your makeup done, and then you'll be in another caravan doing wardrobe. Prior to that, you've been to numerous fittings for the wardrobe and the design of the look that the director wants you to have, and the artistic director as well. And then even where you eat, you know, if you're in this group of people, you eat at this table. If you're in that group of people, it is very military. It's very stratified. And I was quite fascinated by that because I'm more used to smaller scale films where it's everyone hoeing in and, you know, if someone needs to hold a light, well, it's sometimes it's an actor, you know. But this is a very different experience. That was quite fascinating. Mm. And also judging, you know, who do you talk to at lunchtime and who do you leave alone and all of those things. So it takes, you have to have your antennae out because sometimes you'll be with an actor like I felt, for example, that Ralph Fiennes, who was there in the lunch tent, but I felt like he was in character and he wasn't having conversations with anyone except the director. And I thought, well, no, now is not the moment to bowl up and say, I'm a complete fan. That would be highly inappropriate. We're at work,
yeah.
Things like that. But on the other hand, I happened to be in the makeup trailer with Cate Blanchett, just the two of us. And she was very chatty. So, yeah, you just go with the flow, I think, and you assess each situation as it comes. But it was a very fascinating week of work. For so many reasons. And it was all done at Elizabeth Bay House, which is very familiar to so many of us. I lived in Sydney at that time. Yeah.
Wonderful. And theatre as well.
Theatre.
Do you have particular special moments from then?
Oh, many. So many. But I do remember one thing vividly, and I think the reason it's come up in my mind is because the actor concerned has just recently in the last week passed away. Bless him. But the wonderful, wonderful Ralph Cottrell. And Ralph Cottrell came with Peter Brook's production of Midsummer Night's Dream, which was the Royal Shakespeare Company. And it was a very, very famous production, that White Box production it's called, or referred to as such. And it was remarkable. And I remember I was a schoolgirl and my mum took me. And it stayed so vividly in my imagination. And Ralph was in that. And Ralph didn't leave. He loved Australia and he stayed. And then many years later, in my first professional theatre performance, post graduating from NIDA, I was in Nicholas Nickleby, the revival of Nicholas Nickleby, because the first time that the Sydney Theatre Company did Nicholas Nickleby, I was still a student at NIDA. But then they did a revived version of this 8-hour epic. It was so extraordinary. I was so fortunate to get this gig. And this was the version that toured to Adelaide at the Festival Centre there and to Melbourne in the wonderful Victorian Arts Centre in the State Theatre. So it was a remarkable experience. So we're playing these 2,000-seat houses. It was fantastic. And that's your first gig out of NIDA. I was very, very lucky. And Ralph, I remember, was playing Mr. Squeers, and he was wonderful. He was a extraordinary character actor. He was so unpredictable, so vital, and so terrifying in this role. And we were all the terrified little boys in Mr. Squeers' schoolroom. And I remember one night, Ralph swirling around with his arms spread wide, and he gave me the most almighty thwack right across my face, nearly knocked me out. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he whacked me because he was spinning with his arms. And I was like, there was all these people sort of going, are you right? Are you right? You know, sotto voce. People sort of coming up behind me in case I fainted. It was extraordinary. There was no blood. There was no broken bones. I didn't have a broken nose or anything. But I do remember, bless him, Ralph, when we were off stage after that scene, at the soonest opportunity, he came rushing up and said, I didn't know you. I'm so sorry. He was mortified, bless him. But gosh, it was funny. But it's something that we both laughed about ever since.
Oh my God.
But yeah, he gave me a whacking thump.
Oh, gosh.
Nearly set me flying.
I'm glad you were okay.
Yeah. Oh, of course I was. Yeah.
As an actor, director, and lecturer who has been involved in so many different roles, both on and off the stage, do you have a stronger resonance with TV, film, theatre, and particular positions within these areas?
Yes, I do. I do. Theatre is my first love and my greatest love and passion. There is something about the gathering of people together to experience a story together. Whatever form that story takes, that is thrilling to me and an endless source of fascination and exploration. No one performance is exactly the same. You can't replicate what you're doing. You simply have to live in the moment. And once you've established the guidelines through rehearsal, you have to live the part. And that is so exciting to me. And I'm a night person, so of course it's great, you know. 11 o'clock matinees, not so much. But evening shows, my body is, I think, geared after all these years to come alive at around 7 p.m. But I do love that. And acting is the basis of directing for me and of lecturing. Acting is the basis from which I do these other things, and voice training, presentation training, all of those things come from my training and experience as an actor. So for me, that's the central aspect of my identity, I guess, as an artist. Mm-hmm. And even at the National Portrait Gallery, I still saw myself as an actor who was undertaking this other aspect of arts administration and creation.
Are there key insights or pieces of advice that you can give people who are starting out in their careers in the arts?
Oh, I think keep making, keep doing. Work with the best people that you can at any given moment. I think that's something too, to be selective. So while I see keep making, keep doing, try everything, be selective. Work with people who are better than you. It's a bit like that old adage about playing tennis. You don't get better if you don't work with people that play better than you. So I think that's a bit the same with the theatre. If you can find the very best people that you can collaborate with, then you will keep developing your craft. But if you keep doing the same thing, it's like you'll get the same result. So that would be my most important advice. And it's an incredibly rewarding life, but it's also a very challenging one, full of disappointment when you don't get the role or you don't get the gig or whatever. And you've got to actually think about it It's like, do they want an apple, an orange, or a pear? And if you're a banana, then don't even bother. You know, you do have to think about casting like that, and that's a hard lesson.
Can you briefly walk us through a snapshot of some of what goes on behind the scenes to bring film scripts and characters to life?
Film scripts or theatre scripts?
Theatre or film.
Either.
Whichever
okay.
one you think is, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, there's so much to it. One of the things that drives me very much and is a real centerpiece, I suppose, of my particular process as an actor is script analysis. I always say to young actors, try to work on really good material, classic material, well-written material, material that's tried and true, because it gives clues to the actor. Now, it's very different if you're working on some TV scripts, not all, but just some that are really churning it out, like, you know, a classic real soapy where they're shooting amazing amounts of material every day. And although the script writers are often fine writers, the craft is different and the requirements are different. And therefore, the text itself is not going to give you as much. So you need to rely more on your own personality to come across in that sort of material. But if you're doing Ibsen, or if you're doing Chekhov, or if you're doing Shakespeare, or if you're doing Arthur Miller, or if you're doing Andrew Bevel, or Michael Gow, or Dorothy Hewitt, then you're in safe hands. And learning how to read a play, learning how to read a script, learning how to extract all the information. That's three quarters of your job as an actor done. So for me, that's really key. Not everyone has this approach at all. And there are many ways of skinning a cat. And there are many, many skilled and talented people out there that do remarkable work that don't work like that at all. So there's no recipe, but that is my recipe.
I love that.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was also quite curious to pick your brain about was what has stuck with you the most from your time at NIDA mm-hmm. as someone heavily involved in the art scene in Sydney, which is thriving and vibrant.
Yes, it is. What stuck with me from my time as a student at NIDA?
Either student or lecturer.
Just yeah, because I did both. I think what stuck with me from my time as a student in particular were the importance of maintaining and working on the voice as the primary instrument of the actor and the importance of vocal training. And I think that that's really fundamental to the art of the actor, the ability to adopt dialects or characters, but the ability to be heard without any kind of amplification in a 2,000 seat theatre. I mean, we weren't amplified in Nicholas Nickleby. We just used technique and did 8 hours of performance. And, you know, opera singers aren't amplified either. Their technique is sublime. So the quality of an unamplified human voice is wonderful in the theatre, I think. So I do regret a little bit the reliance on amplification now, even though it's very, very good. And every day it seems there are new developments in the sophistication of technology. I still think you can't beat the natural human voice, which is unmediated in that way. So I think we did voice class every day, 1, 2, sometimes 3 hours of voice in our training for 3 years. So you can't help but come away with that as a center, if you like, a central plank of your technique. And it still applies in TV and film, because being able to adjust, being able to find a character's voice and all of those things is still really important. So that for me there, and when, as a teacher, I think it's the recognition that you don't create talent. You're never responsible for your highly successful students, they are responsible completely and utterly for themselves. And I really learnt that from my colleagues, whom I greatly respect at NIDA, Tony Knight, the late Kevin Jackson, Julia Cotton, all these, the late Nick Enright, wonderful, John Clark, of course, wonderful, wonderful teachers, Betty Williams, who was the voice teacher. None of them ever claimed to have created an actor. The actor creates themselves. What you do is you see the talent, you respond to the talent, and you say, how best can I serve that talent? What tools can I give this young person? What opportunities can I give this young person to learn new ways of approaching things? In the end, that actor is responsible for putting all of that together into if you like, a toolkit. I like to call it a toolkit that they carry with them as an artist into the future. You add to their toolkit, but you certainly don't create their talent. That's theirs. It's their gift.
Absolutely. Gosh, they were very lucky to have you as their teacher.
They were very lucky to have all of those people as their teachers. I was lucky to work with those people.
And even the work that you're doing now with Canberra Youth Theatres.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so extraordinary to watch just that generosity of continuing to share knowledge.
Look, I mean, the great secret about teaching, I think, is that you get as much back as you ever give. You learn as much from your students as you possibly convey to them, more probably. So it's a two-way street. It's a pleasure. It really is.
Were there NIDA colleagues and students that you knew were also destined for great things during your time there?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, we just had our 40-year reunion. Now I'm aging myself, but we did. A couple of months ago, we all met up in Sydney. We went to one of our old haunts in Coogee and had the most glorious afternoon. All these grey-haired old actors. It was very, very funny. And just a sheer delight, as if nothing and everything had happened in the intervening years. You live 3 years in that sort of intense hothouse atmosphere. They're like family, from good and bad. And it was just so wonderful to catch up. And all of us have continued in one way or another in the profession. I think that's the real testimony, rather than, you know, the shooting comets, the Judy Davises, the Cate Blanchetts, the Mel Gibsons or whatever, although he's a bit of a dirty word these days, but what an actor, let's face it. You know, that there are extraordinary comets who have extraordinary careers, for sure. And you do see those people as they move through. But I think the testimony to the school and to training and the possibilities of training is the ways in which there's a longevity and that people have built careers. And that was certainly true of us. We have a major casting agent. We have people working in Currency Press, which is the Great Australian Plays press organisation. We have a number of people who are still acting. We have people who are teaching acting, both within schools and in tertiary contexts, all around the country. We have directors, we have writers, but everyone's still engaged. So that training is used and disseminated in amazing ways across the country. The investment by the Australian government in theatre training is by no means a waste because it's given back enormously. And I think that's really important. I think something that people don't recognise. I think unless you make it as a superstar, which is extraordinarily rare, then that's a waste of the taxpayers' money and a waste of one's time. But that's just not true.
I wondered if we could turn now to your time at the Portrait Gallery.
Absolutely.
And what is something that you can share that people may not know about the Portrait Gallery?
Oh, my goodness. What don't they know about the Portrait Gallery? We try to make sure they know everything about the Portrait Gallery. I mean, that's sort of part of our jobs. I think what people don't know is that the total staff is very, very small. It's around, retired from full-time work at the Portrait Gallery to focus on my acting and directing and teaching again. about a year ago. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it's under 60 people who do everything. That is all of those exhibitions. And so that is people from front of house, the people that greet you at the door, the people that the team that I worked with, which was the Access and Learning team, who take all the schools' programs and create public events and public programs for you to attend and participate in, including performance, which was a big part of what we did and still do. But to the curatorial team, who do the research and the very imaginative work of creating the experience of an exhibition, and to those people in what we call registration, which is like downstairs, actually working with the art, protecting the art, if necessary, ensuring that the art is restored for posterity. But also they're the people that hang the exhibitions and mount the works of art and all of that kind of thing. And they're a very important team. Plus the people that, because it's a national institution, actually send all of those artworks under optimal conditions on tours around the country to different galleries and venues around the whole country in order to meet our national remit. And then there's the whole digital world, which is huge now. So there are digital programs going on. There are there's digital communications and all of that happening, so that trying to reach the public, the interested public, in as many ways as possible through as many media as possible. It's a very small team doing an incredible amount of work.
It certainly is.
Yeah. I think most people don't realise that. Yes. Because they think it'll be around 200 or so, but it's not.
They do incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
What draws you into a portrait personally?
Oh, so many things. I think the story for me is always compelling. One of the aspects of the portrait gallery that's interesting is that it's for an item to be collected, the person who is portrayed in the portrait has to have met some sort of criteria of eminence in their field, or historical significance in some way related to and impacting on Australia. And so I think that the stories associated with various portraits, those biographies of both artist and the person portrayed, the sitter, are what really compels me. And the way in which then that story, that information is interpreted by the artist through that choice of image, if it's a photograph, or that way of portraying it in a painting or sculpture. Mm. That's really fascinating, that meeting between the artist and the sitter and bringing both those stories together, both those points of view.
I was really curious, just to, given your incredible experience across so many areas of the arts, just ask you, what would you like to see more of in arts institutions moving forward?
Gosh. I would like to see, you know what I would really like to see? We always have sport at the end of the news, and that's great because sport is fun, sport is important, sport is vital, and it's communal as well as entertainment. And they're very skillful people. I would like to see an arts report at the end of the news as well. Mm. Looking at what's happening around the country, not just once a week on the ABC at a very odd viewing time, but actually as part of the news and made to sit in a similar way that we put sport there. I think we don't help ourselves by comparing ourselves to sport in many ways, but there are more people participating in arts in some way than there are in sport, actually. Research has told us that. We need both. It's not either or. I just think we need both, and I think both should be celebrated and explored. So that's what I would like to see, and that's maybe the lobbying of all the institutions to create that. I'd like that world.
Great answer.
I would really like that world. But I do want to tell you about some stuff that's coming up.
Please do.
At the end of the month, we have a forum at ACT Hub, which is about independent theatre. And we're bringing together a number of independent theatre makers, not all of whom work at ACT Hub, but who work in other parts of Canberra and even other art forms. So we have Australian Dance Party, Alison Plevy. We have Mill Theatre. We have, of course, ACT Hub. But we also have Luke Rogers from Canberra Youth Theatre. And he's an independent theatre maker as well. And Christopher Samuel Carroll. From Bear Witness, and we're going to have a conversation about the highs and lows and the difficulties and the potentialities of independent theatre making in Canberra. So that's on Wednesday night at 6:30 at ACT Hub, and it's free. So come along. And in addition to that, we have tonight we're opening one of the ACT Hub learning program. We have a development program for young and emerging artists. And a show tonight is opening, Reuben Guthrie, which is playing for four performances. Reuben Guthrie is a fabulous Australian play. And I saw it last night and they're doing a really great job. So that's going to be really exciting. Then we have Everyman Theatre doing Marry Me a Little, which is a charming two-handed musical. And it's all Sondheim. But it's the Sondheim songs that didn't get into the big Sondheim musicals, you know. Quite amazing. And they've been put together. It's beautiful. And then my play, my company is doing a wonderful contemporary British play called The Children, which is about three retired nuclear physicists in a world that is a little like post-Fukushima. But it's also very funny. So that's what I wanted to say, that these are the things I'm excited about in the near future.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me at Art Sound and sharing so generously all of your fantastic experiences and insights.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Karen.
Today, I've been talking to Karen Vickery as arts correspondent for Art Sound FM.